Oh God. Oh my God.
All right, well, fuck yeah. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for asking me to.
Yeah, I've been enjoying our conversation on Twitter about Schrader and all sorts of other fun things.
Yeah. Paul Schrader's great. I do not understand the Schrader hate.
Dying of the light.
Some of his, okay, but that doesn't count because that was taken from him. That's not the movie he was intending to make. He boycotted it. But even if that was the movie he wanted to make and it was bad, he still did Cat People, which is enough to, no matter what happens after that, he's good. And he also wrote, I believe, Obsession. I think that was the De Palma movie he wrote.
I gotta agree with you. Cat People fucking rules. I watched that the other day. I like never have time to watch an extra movie, and I crammed this one in on your recommendation. Very fun. It didn't convert me on Schrader, but man, what a fucking blast that movie is.
You're fired.
What is Cat People?
Cat People.
Yeah, so it's a remake of a 1942 Val Lewton horror movie. Mm-hmm. So this was made in mid-80s. Malcolm McDowell's in it, John Hurd, Annette O'Toole, and basically there's these people and they turn into cats. And yeah, when they turn into cats, they turn into, black leopards, mm-hmm. and they kill. And the only way to stop the transformation is to have sex with their sibling.
Okay, I'm sold. Let's go watch this movie right now.
It's so good. It's so like 80s goofy, but fantastic. I don't know. I loved it.
I'm interested in the science behind sibling sex.
Are they twins?
You had me at sibling sex.
Is that your favorite type of adult documentary?
I mean, there were multiple times where I was just like, this is so fucking dumb, but I had a good time. So,
speaking of so fucking dumb, this week.
Yeah, actually, go ahead and bring us in, Sean.
Welcome back to Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your host, Sean, here with my co-host,
Nick. I'm Nick.
And our producer,
Peter. Hello.
And we have our special guest, Chris Coffell, here today. Why don't you tell the people what it is you do?
Also, did we get your name right?
Coffell is Coffell, technically, but Coffell sounds nicer, I think. So, I guess I occasionally write, mostly at Film School Rejects for probably the last 8 years or so. For the last few years, mostly it's just in October. Horror is my favorite genre. So every year at Film School Rejects, we do a big 31 days of horror lists, where every day in October, we have a new list of 10 horror movies. We've been doing it for a long time now. So it started out, you know, like best vampire movie, best werewolf movie, but now it's very like specific.
Sex movie.
Yeah. Well, last year was erotic. It was one of the categories, and Cat People did make the list.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then I previously had a Nick Cage column I wrote at Film School Rejects for 2 years, I think, and a couple other random columns. And then occasionally I pop up at other places. Been a while, but if you dig deep, I've done a bunch of stuff at Bloody Disgusting as well, and have recently started doing some stuff at Amicus Horror, which is a new site. But mostly I play Rocket League, so that's where you could find me.
Nice.
Nick and I are on that Helldivers 2 train right now.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make noise with that.
Oh, no, it's fine now. It was buzzing for a second. Oh. Yeah. Nick's got big money on the line with the basketball game going on right now, so.
Oh, who's your money on?
I'm with Purdue. So if we, or sorry, I'm not with Purdue. I'm UConn.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, I'm switching over. Last minute, no, I'm not.
Change the bracket. It's fine. Yeah. What if you could just
Primal wins? Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. I do want to talk about Primal though.
Wait, let me finish my segue from 5 minutes ago.
Yeah,
speaking of dumb movies, this week, we have Con Air and Ghost Rider 2, Spirit of Vengeance.
Yeah.
Those aren't dumb movies.
No, you're right.
Those are serious movies.
We're in the action category.
These are movies to base your entire personality on.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
We will get into why.
Yeah. So, Chris, I mean, you're obviously kind of like an internet go-to person in terms of Cage stuff. So like, what got you started? How, why do you love Nick Cage so much?
So I grew up in the 90s. So Cage was always kind of a, you know, unknown quantity, a big deal. Raising Arizona is probably the first movie I knew him from. But when I became, like, I really got into Cage, this is weird because I was, think I was probably 11, and we went and seen Face Off. My family would go to the drive-in pretty regularly, and I wanted to go see Batman and Robin. My parents wanted to see Face Off. They opened up on the same day. Face Off went out, which I was adamant that I did not want to see, but then I loved it. And from there forth,
because like, your parents are not monsters.
I don't know. Batman and Robin are is also a sick movie.
That movie is awful.
Oh, just like,
it's the only Batman, Batman movie I've never watched to completion.
It's not terrible.
That's Batman edging. Yeah.
It's a great movie. You just sit down, start drinking. The movie's going to go through. You're going to have a great time.
I missed my 20-year window to enjoy that movie then.
You can figure it out.
Is that the Mr. Freeze one?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yep. All right.
So good. Everybody chill.
Nice to meet you.
See? You even remember quotes from it.
I don't even know that's a quote from it.
It probably is.
It is.
I always turn that movie off at the same place, and that's when the Bat Amex card comes out.
Oh, what a great film. We're now a Batman and Robin podcast.
Yeah, we're pivoting. Chris, this is your time.
Yeah. Welcome to the batting cage.
Oh. No, sorry, it's nipples on the bat suit, just because I still own that URL.
That's Batman Forever.
It carries over.
They're both Schumacher. That's true. They are both Schumacher. Batman Forever is actually pretty good. That's got a little bit of a renaissance.
Like that film a lot. Like Val Kilmer, underrated Batman.
I agree.
Yeah.
Christian Bale, worst Batman.
I do not like Christian Bale's Batman at all.
He was great in Captain Corelli's Mandolin, though.
He was great in Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Mondras is Batman.
Oh, fuck yeah. He just gets shot in the ass. All right.
What are we talking about? This is a Nicolas Cage podcast where we've taken 64 Nicolas Cage movies and bracketed them till Nick and I decide what ultimately is the best Nick Cage movie as decided by two idiots that are us. And the rules and reason for why we pick things sway wildly week to week.
So, Chris, you kind of were a progenitor of the March Madness Nick Cage thing. So I want to talk about that just a little bit. What was your idea behind that? How'd you pick your 16? And why are you smarter than us for only doing 16?
So I did 16, one, so it would just be shorter, obviously. I recall, I have to go back and look. I think I picked the 16 that were the highest rated on IMDb, which is a dumb way to choose things. Anything that aggregates scores anywhere is mostly stupid. But that's how I chose the 16. So it wouldn't be just completely me picking my favorite 16. There would be something interesting behind it. And I think Raising Arizona won my bracket, if I remember, but I'd have to pull it up and see. Yeah.
I was surprised to see if it was just the top 16 in your list. I was surprised to see that Bad Lieutenant was one of his 16 best films circa 2018. And I know that you like that movie, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but why? I still haven't found anybody to explain why that movie is likable.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying you're not invited to my birthday party.
If it's Bad Lieutenant themed, I don't need to be there.
But it's got iguanas.
Yeah, but yeah, a sober guy throwing a drug-addled birthday party sounds terrible.
It's hard to explain. Drugs at home. I mean, it's you have Werner Herzog and Nicolas Cage, and that's just the right amount of madness for it to work. Surprised that you're not a fan, because I was shocked that you guys were so low on Bringing Out the Dead. I don't know how.
Love that movie.
Yeah, that movie is really, really good. But the reasoning behind why we kicked it is
valid.
Yeah, valid and specific about mostly Schrader, but
which we established already was incorrect.
And also Joe's a fucking great.
A great movie.
We're gonna fight this whole time,
Cat People. And we're never going to talk about Con Air or Ghost Rider.
No.
It's happened before.
Let's talk about Primal.
I love Primal. Have you seen Primal?
I have seen Primal. I love that line. Delight? They talks about what does he shouts the line he shouts about like needing his cat.
Jag.
Primal's fun.
See, it's fun.
I said it. I told you I'd rewatch it.
Yeah, I know. I just have to keep telling you how great it is until it's you do.
Not great.
It's a terrific film. It's easily top five.
Oh, you are wrong there.
I didn't say of what.
Fair.
But yeah, what do you guys want to start with? Ghost Rider? Spirit of Vengeance?
I could Vengeance.
So the not so direct sequel to the original Ghost Rider where Johnny Blaze has to save Danny, the son of the devil.
Would you say that it's the spiritual sequel?
Ah.
I'll leave now.
Yeah, that's your best joke of this whole podcast. From becoming the new incarnation of the devil, all the while avoiding Blackout, who is the villain.
Kind of a shitty villain.
Better than the boy band from the first movie.
The elemental boy band. Yeah.
So are the special effects, the action, and general just demeanor of the film. I like this movie a lot. This movie is a romp.
Yeah, it's certainly a more enjoyable version of the film than the original Ghost Rider. I was glad to see that jelly beans got replaced with pills. Always nice to do that. And not even like pills you just play around with, but like some pretty good muscle relaxers and painkillers.
Well, that's nice. I'm sure, you know, probably sore from having all his flesh burned off nightly.
Mm-hmm. He drank. He had a drink of that wine.
Yeah.
Would be nice on a salad, but that's old wine for you.
Old wine.
We have Idris Elba giving us a very wide French accent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It goes places. Rarely goes to the same place twice.
Well, yeah.
That sounds like him in Con Air, though.
Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that.
That dances around, too.
Yeah, the Idris Elba one, it definitely doesn't start French. Like, until they mention that he's French, I never hear a French accent until, like, it's halfway through the movie. Because initially, he's just Idris Elba.
He's got, like, a little bit of generic European. It's like, this could be any kind of region in, like, Southern Europe.
Yeah, I think the only thing that makes him French is he's kind of like, ha, ha, ha. That's it.
I would have killed for a ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, yeah. Ha, 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 ha.
Is this one in a ha, ha?
It's so old.
What was up with his contact lenses?
I don't know. I was going to ask, why yellow eyes?
Well, he drinks
cat
a lot?
People. I mean, it's cat people.
It must be cat people reasons.
It could be cat people.
He's a werecat.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go have sex with his brother.
So, Chris, what was your interaction with this movie? I feel like you've probably seen every Cage movie, but...
I'm a big fan of Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. It's such a step up from the first movie in every way. And I like that, yes, it's a sequel, but it assumes you haven't seen Ghost Rider with the opening where he completely explains who Ghost Rider is and how he became Ghost Rider. So it kind of works as a reboot. I'm also a fan of Neville Dean and Taylor, the directing combo that did the movie. So once they were working with Cage, being a fan of the Crank movies, I was all for this. And initially it was supposed to be, you know, as part of the Marvel Knights series, which were supposed to be darker, more adult oriented comic book movies. They did Punisher Warzone. And I thought this was going to be, Punisher Warzone is fantastic. And so this was supposed to be similar to that. It was supposed to be R. It was supposed to have plenty of gore. And Sony kind of got cold feet. They changed a lot of the script and they cut the budget in half, which I think kind of shows, which is weird because the CGI special effects are better than the first movie, but they're still they're still not great. But there's some great set pieces and it's very frenetic, has lots of manic energy. And the two car chase scenes, it opens with a car chase and ends with a car chase. And they're both real cars, practical effects for the most part with the car stuff. Fantastic. So I've been a fan, even though I think the movie never got to be what it should have been, but it's still great.
I think it does a lot of great stuff. And I will always appreciate taking a character like that. And like for your final set piece, like now we're going to set it during the day so you can see all the action. None of that fucking Pacific Rim bullshit where it's like, here's the big monster fight at night underwater. You can't see shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love day action scenes. Like you don't have enough of them. And this movie, I mean, almost all this movie takes place during the day. The one scene where he gets shot with like that rocket launcher thing that's at night. But for the most part, it's all day. And I think Neville Dean Taylor did a good job kind of covering up where they didn't have the budget. They do all these interesting cutaways where, you know, they have these scenes where it cuts to work. Everything else is black and you just see the action taking place on a black background. It's like somebody else for Bloody Disgusting just wrote about Ghost Rider today, and they compared it to like Mortal Kombat fatality cutscenes, and that's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I could say that.
I could tell that they had cut some of the budget down in like the lack of transformations. It was, I'm gonna kneel down, I'm the Ghost Rider. I'm gonna kneel down, I'm Nicolas Cage. You didn't have much in the way of like, you know, American Werewolf like changing or anything like that.
He snorts fire one time out of his nostrils, but
he does. Yeah.
He does that one where he's like turning Nick Cage up to 11 on the motorcycle, and like they're just kind of superimposing like bits of a skull and stretching it over his face. It doesn't have the wow factor of the transformation in the original film.
For sure. Yeah, those aren't like transformations though. That's not like, I don't know, head burning.
I know,
cool.
I'm just saying that's the closest we get to anything.
One of the effects that I thought was really fucking nice though was because it was so shot in the daytime, you see the flame and like that black thick smoke that's coming off of it. You just never got in Ghost Rider 1 because it's just sort of this like magic spirit flame. It's like, no, it's like a gross gnarly ass flame.
He looks like he smells bad.
Yeah, for real.
Well, the scene on the motorcycle where he has all of the face stuff, you know, that's more like, yes, there's obviously some special effects there, but that's a lot of like Cage making weird faces and then just like slightly altering it. It kind of like, he feels like he's channeling that. He always talks about being a fan of like German expressionism and like surrealism. And that's what that scene feels like to me. And I might be misquoting or misremembering, but I spoke to Brian Taylor about this movie like years ago. And because I had made, which I shared with you, Peter, a little video, right? Like I edited that scene in black and white and made it put like old silent film music over it. And I'm pretty sure
that they
kicked around the idea of doing parts of the movie in black and white and removing CGI altogether. So still having him like in the costume he would wear for the CGI, but then it just be like caged facial expressions. But Sony was not into that idea.
they're cowards, man. They fucked this up.
They are cowards.
Well, and I mean, did this came out after Warzone, Punisher Warzone, I'm assuming. That's why they got scared, because I know Punisher Warzone did not do well. Like, it did not get a wide release. I wanted to see it in theaters, and I didn't really get a chance to when it came out.
I think it's like 3 years after Warzone.
Okay. Because, those were the two movies that came out under that title, right? Under that banner.
It's kind of crazy that they only had the two, but I guess they were going through a lot of change at that point.
Yeah, Sony's always been kind of
iffy
on, not as bad as Fox.
It didn't help too that like The Dark Knight took off, and then, you know, The Avengers was right around the corner, so comic book films became more serious, I guess, not fun, silly like they were in the 90s. Venom, though, is kind of getting back to that maybe a little bit. That's like closer. That's more in line, I think, with the two Venom movies are more in line with this Ghost Rider.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely feel more in line with the serious or the humorous take on the character.
Well, I remember I was a big fan of Ghost Rider comics at this time, and I always loved the Johnny Blaze is a fucking moron like character. Like, he was a carny. He grew up in a carnival. He knows how to fix and ride motorcycles, doesn't know anything else. So he's just a really dumb superhero who's just way too powerful. And most of the trouble he gets in is his own fucking fault for just sticking his head sticking his nose where it shouldn't be. So I always liked, I always like a big dumb hero.
good himbo.
Yeah, exactly. Weird and like, bony himbo.
Hero like Ghost Rider, you don't really need a big buff like superhero body. You just need a guy who you can put a skull on, who can like move at a moderate pace.
He needs to look good in a leather jacket, basically.
Yeah, in a leather jacket, that's it, right?
And also just show up to set with your face painted like a voodoo skull and not tell anyone you're gonna do it.
I love that.
There you go. I love this man so much.
What a fucking weirdo. I love him. He's fantastic. Oh, okay, one of the things that I hate about this movie it's probably the only thing I hate about this movie. The writing is really fucking dumb. It's, like, what writing exists is really stupid.
The dialogue is rough.
It's pretty simple.
It's meant to get us to the set pieces.
Yep. And it tries to make every line like a kind of clever one-liner action hero note. And it kind of leans into like everything that's said needs to be funny. I mean, sometimes it kind of is.
Did like the singular callback from what I felt in this movie to the original was when Ghost Rider knocks that guy down and like they run over him and he just kind of turns to the camera and says, "Roadkill." So good.
I did like that. It's very comic book.
Yeah.
Was that the only line the Ghost Rider says that wasn't him like repeating?
He also says, "Hungry."
Oh, that's right.
Yep. Need to say hungry.
I will say the Pennant stare in this one doesn't carry the same weight as the first movie.
It does not. And it needed just a little something connecting their like little faces or mouths. Yeah,
that would not have turned on Rebel Wilson.
Something on the eyes. Yeah, no.
My favorite line of dumb dialogue in this movie is when the devil at work, he talks to the kid Danny on the phone, and the kid then like screams and like passes out. And he basically tells Blackout, he says, "Think of him as sort of a computer. You know computers, right?" Like, this movie is 2011. Of course he knows what a computer is. This isn't, you know, this would have been a movie in the mid 80s, then fine, that line, I get it. But it's so weird and out of place. It's just strange.
My biggest issue with this film is Chekhov's flaming pee. Because we see the idea of him using his pee as a flamethrower. We never see him use it on anybody.
That would have been a great weapon.
He was very poorly hydrated. I didn't see him drink water once during this. Oh, no, he has the pitcher of water.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He doesn't plug that down. Yeah.
So
that scene with Danny in the diner where he just touches him for no reason. It's like,
I thought I saw a bee on your head. I thought it was going to sting your face.
Danny gets really attached to him really quick for reasons I don't understand.
I mean, you saw the flamethrower.
Daddy issues.
That's true. But he doesn't see it, right? It's just in his
It's all in his brain.
Yeah. He imagines it, I guess.
He's got a good imagination. Yeah. He's a kid who has no dad. Yeah, just have to think about stuff.
Yeah, and like he said, Johnny's cooler than most of the guys that his mom hangs out with, so
that's legitimately fair. And Ghost Rider would be cooler stepdad.
Yeah, this comes after he tried to kill them too, so
that's true.
I do like the mom's when she's rescuing Danny and that guy comes in and she throws the knife at the guy and the guy catches it, like, what are you gonna do? And then she pulls the gun on him.
Yeah,
that was a good move.
Now I know they allude to her connection with like an arms dealer or whatever early in the movie, but my gripe or my concern with this movie is when she just somehow becomes like a competent sniper. Like, why?
She's good.
Yeah.
I mean, she did have the devil's baby.
That's true. So she's a good
wrestler. She's been around the block.
I miss the Ghost Rider point, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
From the first one. Yeah, the weird bony boy claw.
Ah, I love a bony boy.
I will say, probably in terms of a theatrical released film, the best Chris Lambert performance ever.
It felt really wasted having Christopher Lambert in that role.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
He was he performed it so well. Yeah. Just not what I usually expect from Chris Lambert.
Yeah.
And I think it works as a treat.
Yeah, if you're going to waste an actor, you might as well waste an actor that nobody thinks of ever.
I do like how they're like, oh, he was the Highlander. Let's give him a sword. But he's also blind, so let's make sure we give him a sword where no one is around. I did try and check to see how the makeup held up scene to scene, because I remember when we first watched this, I read a thing where he didn't want to go through makeup every day, so he didn't, like, wash off the tattoos.
Did you notice any difference?
No.
Yeah, I mean, also with a movie that had its budget cut, like, you probably just were like, no, dude, don't take that off.
I mean, also his role is so short they probably just filmed it in a day or 2 days, since he got to go to the hotel with it once at least,
allegedly. I really enjoy this movie. It's dumb, it's fun, it's a good length. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't try to be anything that it's not. It's which I like in a dumb movie. I don't like.
Well, so like last week we talked to, or last episode we talked about Mom and Dad, and that was an hour and 20 movie that feels like an hour 45. And this is an hour 30 movie that feels pretty crisp. You know?
There's not a lot of fat on this movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of words.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it starts with a chase, and it basically, it just is a chase the entire time for the most part. They take that dino break, and that's basically it. That's not true, because halfway through it does have a brief moment where it kind of turns into this like buddy road comedy for a little bit when they're riding down the car and Idris Elba catches up with them on his motorcycle and they're all just having a good laugh. That's kind of out of nowhere, but it's fun. But yeah, the movie flies by.
So here's the real question, Chris, what's your hell vehicle? Is it truck, camel, motorcycle, larger friend that puts you in a Bjorn? That's mine.
That's a good choice.
Mine's Nick wearing a baby Bjorn, and I'm just like rocking the front.
So it's just a hell Nick.
Yeah.
I want the Inceptor from Mad Max.
So,
good choice.
That would work in hell, I think. Mad Max is basically hell for the most.
Although close that enough. Car gets destroyed in every film, so I don't know how reliable it is.
But it comes back every time. So
probably more if it's held out.
It just comes back cooler.
That's fair.
Yeah.
From hell. Chris, you're from Portland, right?
I'm from Phoenix, but I live in Portland now. Yes.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I feel like you should have picked one of those weird tall bikes.
Or a unicycle.
That would work too.
Unicycles, yeah.
They're already, like, lots of people are doing flame spinning and shit there, so why not just turn into a hell unicycle? Nick, what's your pick?
Probably one of those like stupid hoverboard things, like, you know, it's got two wheels and like you stand on it, but like every time I get on one I can't like get my balance, so I look like a freaking spinning dumbass until I invariably fall off. But I think the power of hell would keep me on it, and I would really cruise on it. So hoverboard.
93 Geo Prism. Ooh. Don't ask me follow-ups.
Okay.
It already is a hell vehicle.
I kind of want to know what the body color is.
Seafoam green.
That is exactly the color of my old roommate's Geo Prism.
I have good. In my life owned 3 Geo Prisms.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
None of them have turned to hell vehicles.
Well, I mean, I could have died in all of them. But.
Fair. Now, the Prism, we're a Geo podcast now. Is that a 3-cylinder like the Metro, or does it have all 4 like the Storm?
I believe it has all 4.
Nice.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It had the power.
I was a Geo Storm guy myself. It was the hot rod or the pussy magnet of the Geo range.
Naturally.
Yeah. No back seat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hatchback. So good.
We've watched Mom and Dad. You know how you can fuck in that car.
I can confirm. It's just as hard as you would think a 6'1" dude getting down in a Geo is. It's very difficult.
I love this film. I don't have much else to say other than it's great. Go watch it.
Yeah, Chris, any kind of final thoughts on this one?
If this feels like a movie that came 10 years too early or 10 years too late, like if this movie had come out in the late 90s or potentially now, I think it would be received better. But as it stands now, I think it's a ton of fun. And I just want to highlight my favorite part is towards the end during that final chase when a Ghost Rider delivers a rock bottom to Blackout from one moving vehicle onto another moving vehicle. You just don't see that enough in movies.
Oh, I have one huge complaint about this movie that I just remembered. When he sends Rourke back to hell, he tells him to go home.
Yeah.
It seems like a missed opportunity.
Rather than saying go to hell?
Yeah.
But I think that's the joke. It's like we all know he's going to hell. So instead he's saying go home.
For as cool as that movie, every line of that movie tried to make it sound, that was the one to really kind of...
That's a joke that required you to think more than this movie deserved.
Yes.
So,
but I think about this movie a lot.
You guys notice at the end his flames are blue. I guess that's he's like, he's good now, or he has his soul back. I'm not sure.
Oh man, going back to the mid 90s, he's got that angel fire.
Yeah,
that's right.
I prefer GeoCities, but that's fine.
Me too.
Who wasn't a GeoCities guy? GeoCities rocked.
Oh, my
angel fire was for fucking assholes.
Keeping with our Geo theme.
Yeah, right. Geos only. Geo podcast. Now we're really talking about geocaching.
Rocks. Yeah, and geolocation.
Yeah. Okay, so on the matrix of good movie, good cage performance, bad movie, good, bad, bad, good, good.
Good. I think.
Bad, bad.
Good movie. Great movie. Amazing. Fun. Awesome movie. In terms of Cage performance, I'm going to say the same thing that I did with Mom and Dad. It's just like, he is giving the performance that is expected of him and that the director wants. Like, it's not
scratching at the door.
Yeah. It's hammy. It's campy. And I am here for it.
I think it's a good movie and a great performance, but I think it works like... this hamminess works so much better in this than it does in something like Mom and Dad. I don't know. Mom and Dad, I will put it on my fucking tombstone. Not a great movie.
It's not a great movie.
It's not even a fun movie.
I got on a limb. Mom and Dad. Going out on a limb there saying that Mom and Dad's not a great movie.
Yeah. So. Very hot take.
Yeah. I went back. I said, not a fun movie.
Yeah. Chris, what do you think on this one?
So I would say, flaws aside, budget being cut, I still think it's a good movie. But I'm pretty simple. If I like it, it's good. I don't care if it's stupid or quote unquote bad. If I like it, it's good. And I think it's a great Cage performance. I think he knows what he's doing. He does it well. And I think it lets him play in that, where he gets to do those facial expressions and do all that weird German stuff that he loves while being a superhero that he also loves. I can't recommend it. It's like, I would describe this movie of if an Iron Maiden album cover came to life, it would be Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, I think.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. So if you can only see two Ghost Rider movies in your life, just watch this one.
Twice.
Yes.
Speaking of segues, Con Air.
Man, I love your new format. It's so efficient.
No one's even mentioned segues. We were talking about hoverboards, Sean.
Oh, hell, segue. Different.
That was going to be when I gave it. I'm like, I should do a segue now, but we were still talking about it. Be better at setups.
Not for you.
A hell segue would be so fucking lame. It would just like go faster up a hill, but very stable.
Can you imagine how cool you would look like rolling down by the pier like
on a hell segue? You'd still have to wear the hell helmet, though.
Yeah, the helmet.
Like, God damn it.
Yeah. Thanks for that setup.
Ta-da! Dickhead!
So Con Air, eh?
Fucking love Con Air.
This movie is astounding.
Ah, you're warming up again.
I loved Con Air the first time.
You just hate Garland Green.
I can't wait to talk about Garland Green.
Garland Green serves no fucking purpose in this movie.
Thank God we're talking about it first.
Garland Green is
incredible. He fills the Hannibal Lecter role of the psychopaths
that
on the airplane.
That is not used at all in this film.
It doesn't have to be. It's just like a menagerie of psychos on an airplane that all like fit into different, I don't know, film shits. And
we're supposed to feel good about him just being loose at the end of this film?
Yeah, he's going to be president next year.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Chris, what are your feelings on Garland Green?
I mean, I'm pro Garland Green. It's like
Garland
anytime
Green
you can,
did nothing wrong.
Yeah, yeah. He was probably set up, first of all, because he had a
chance.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Yeah. He's the most.
He wore a child's head across three.
He just
three
said
states.
It was a woman's head. Let's be specific.
He said girl, but yeah,
he does say girl, but he didn't say that he killed her. He could have found that head.
He could have found that head.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, if I had a nickel for every head I found. And war. Right.
He had an opportunity to kill. He did not. Mm-hmm. He was the most sane person on that plane.
Why he the understood fuck was that little girl living there?
I don't know.
I mean, there were all sorts of people that lived around there.
Yeah,
it was probably the dude under the truck.
Yeah.
My wife and I watched this a couple days ago, and that scene, she was like clutching me. She was like, no, the little girl.
As Garland Green says, most murders are like a crime of necessity, not done out of passion.
I do like his little like witticisms. I don't hate the character. It's just I wanted a tighter story. That's all.
I'm going to get a full chest Garland Green tattoo.
I hope you do.
Steve Buscemi's big bug eyes. That's your nipples.
Definitely. Still looking in different directions for some reason. Can't fix that with tattoos.
Your nipples?
Oh, man. Yeah, this movie is pretty good. I had a good time with it the first time. I had forgotten like how much I actually do enjoy how stupid and fun it is.
Yeah,
it's a little too long for my taste, but you know, I always think all these movies are too long because I'm grumpy and old now.
This movie is great. It starts with it starts at an oil rig that just produces fire.
As they're supposed to.
He gets 7 years for killing a man in self-defense.
Yeah, that is such a dumb conceit of this entire thing.
Everything in this movie is a dumb fucking conceit. None of this movie makes sense when you talk about it.
I mean, it's a reason for him to have long hair.
I do like that.
So, Chris, what was your first experience with Con Air?
Well, I don't know. My technically first experience was just seeing part of it when I went to see Face Off because I saw the drive-in. And so Con Air came out the week before Face Off, which is insane to think about. That Con Air opened in theaters and then a week later Face Off opened. So I remember very strong gear. So I remember seeing part of it then. I don't know when I first watched it, but I'm a big fan of Con Air. And the thing I think is most interesting is I feel like this is the movie that made Cage kind of an action star. You know, The Rock came out the year before, 2 years before, but in that, you know, that's still Sean Connery and Michael Bay, and Cage is kind of like the nerdy character. Con Air kind of turned him into an action star, and I think it's the movie that people kind of think of when they think of Cage as this kind of like over the top actor that chews a lot of scenery. But despite his accent, Cage is like pretty reserved and subtle in this movie compared to the rest of the cast. Like John Cusack is the sedate one who goes over the top, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
I think everyone does. Like Nicolas Cage is pretty sedate in this film and doesn't even have that many lines all in all.
It's actually a pretty restrained Ving Rhames performance too, given that the other ones that we've seen with him, he's a lot more over the top.
Yeah.
Well, compared to Bringing Out the Dead, for sure.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about the Rogues Gallery.
Cyrus the Virus.
Yep.
Played by
John Malkovich.
Really steals this film.
He is a terrific villain.
Yeah.
He's got great villain face, great villain goatee. He gets to talk about his stinking breath when killing children. That's cool.
I love the anecdote about Malkovich getting the script and like being with his buddy who was also like his script reader advisor or whatever. And he just immediately chucks it. And then his friend's like, good, that's a piece of shit. And he's like, no, I'm doing that one. I just don't need to read it. I got it from page one.
Yeah, perfect.
I do like after Dave Chappelle's character, Pinball dies. And like when he finds out Pinball's dead, he's like, oh. I like Pinball, even though he fucking...
I cannot get over the fact that they made a fake Dave Chappelle.
Oh, man. And it looks so bad, too.
You know, at this point, though, I'd take fake Dave Chappelle any day of the week.
Yeah, true enough.
This was a much more promising Dave Chappelle. Also, I think it's actually pretty clever the way Cameron Poe uses Dave Chappelle to write a note to Cusack. Yeah. Like, that's pretty smart. For as dumb as this movie is... That seems like a smart thing to do.
I mean, there's a lot of collateral damage potentially from that, but yes.
I was trying to think, when did Cameron Poe learn about Cusack? Like, when did he know, like, how did he know his name to, like, write him the note?
He overheard, because he was in the cabin for a second.
Okay.
He overheard them talking to Larkin.
That's what it had to have been.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, this really gets me thinking is like, that is a lot of collateral damage all over one guy's insulin shot. Like,
He loves Baby-O.
Yeah, he loves Baby-O, and that's great. They shared snowballs, which was wildly irresponsible.
Is Nicolas Cage, is Cameron Poe responsible for Baby-O's diabetes?
He could be. Got him on those snowballs.
He doesn't know if they're called snowballs.
Yeah, just those pink things.
Yeah, those pink things.
Yeah, were they not allowed to say snowballs? No, because they show the packaging, right?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
that's what's so weird. Like, you could just read it.
Oh, both of these movies feature Hostess, like,
yeah,
snacks.
Which, oh, yeah. I want
to
talk about,
you know, going to go back to, sorry to interrupt, to Ghost Rider a lot. Real quick. I fucking hate the way he eats that Twinkie in Ghost Rider.
And smashes it open.
Yeah, and then like fucking suck tubes it out. Gross.
Don't say suck tube.
I'm going to say suck tube more in my life now. Suck tube is now a part of my common vernacular.
Please, God, it's my Chris, lexicon. Go
ahead. Come on, I do love that.
Let's hear what you got.
In Ghost Rider, though, where he touches the sandwich and it immediately rots. And he touches the apple and it immediately rots. But he touches the Twinkie and it doesn't rot because it's already trash.
He was also only touching the packaging for the Twinkie.
But shouldn't that also have, like, broken down?
It's plastic. It would take a long time.
Hold it for a minute.
Just long enough to suck tube it.
Also, the rules of what, like, degrades when he touches it were wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to Con Air.
It's wildly inconsistent.
Yeah. So we were talking about
damage.
Malkovich. Boom. Okay, we've talked about Malkovich.
Yeah, pinball done.
Pinball done.
Baby out done.
Well, he's not a villain. He's not Rogues Gallery.
I mean, he's still a criminal, but yeah.
He is kind of, well, true. He is kind of a villain in his own right.
Because he has diabetes?
Yeah.
Yeah, gross. Yeah.
The police and or the guards in this film, villains. All of them, except for the lady guard.
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah.
Bishop.
Yeah, Bishop is good. That dude with the mustache, what an asshole.
What's that? Okay, I always forget this guy's name. The one who is flying the plane.
Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing. What's...
Oh, MC Gainey?
MC Gainey, okay. Yeah, dude. MC Gainey. Fucking love a good MC Gainey appearance. He's
so good in everything.
He is awesome. He is my favorite trash human being.
He is always...
Sorry,
like,
Sean. You've been replaced.
Like, he's the shit no matter what. But yeah, he's fucking awesome. I love MC Gainey.
I miss my mustache. Speaking of things that didn't age well from the 90s, the flamboyant queer villain.
Well, we talked about this, I think.
Yeah, with my brother,
that,
actually.
Yeah, Sally Can't Dance, the character, is based on a real-life person who was, like, I don't know, gender queer or something in the prison system. So quit hating on the gays.
Still not a great representation.
Yeah.
It's very much of its time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
this
better
is
than The Rock.
I think
the hairdresser in The Rock.
The hairdresser. I think the only thing with Sally Can't Dance that's kind of shitty is just that he slaps her versus it's like, oh, well, that's a lady. You know?
Well, she did not try to set him on fire.
That's true. So punching.
No punching.
Good thing.
Off the table.
You get punched Dave Chappelle, though.
Because he did set someone on
he
fire.
He did set someone on fire.
Yeah,
fucking punch Dave Chappelle. You heard it here, folks.
Or set him on fire. Either one is fine.
Yeah, it's tit for tat at that point, right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure he called the Native American guy Cochise also.
He did. So.
Yeah, he was very, he was triggering. Very not nice. Yeah.
Who'd have guessed? Dave Chappelle.
Shocking all of us. The foresight of Con Air.
If only we'd listened.
I think my only beef with this entire movie, like it's popcorn, like from start to finish. I think it is just a little too long. I think you could have ended it after the plane crashes. I don't think you need that last fire truck fight.
Oh.
And also the like smasher that is just there on
Are
the
Are you kidding me? The you mean definitively the best death in a film ever? I'm gonna stab you through the ankle. Uh-huh. I'm gonna
run you through a
raise bridge. You up on a ladder so that you go flying through a bridge, somehow losing the handcuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're now uncuffed, whatever, it's cool, because you're gonna land on like
perfectly
high voltage transmission wires, you're gonna get shocked, but guess what? You're not dead. You're landing on a conveyor belt in a smasher and we're gonna bust you. That's so fucking cool.
No, this movie needs that, Peter. You're wrong.
It's like,
right, then take out the fire truck part, or like take out the airplane crash or something. Like, just remove one of the other elements.
No, that's all perfect. What we need to remove is
don't say Garland Green.
I'm not gonna say Garland Green. I'm not fucking dying on
all
that.
The issue with the end is the handcuff. His arm should have been like ripped off when he flew.
Yeah. Oh man,
it's perfect. If it makes sense.
Physically tore his hand off and then he went through the bridge and got shocked. Oh, that would have been so much cooler.
Yeah, that would have elevated this movie.
Just add that one little bit. There's room for expansion.
There's just so many, like,
I went through a bridge at 4 a.m.
I don't give a fuck. There's just so many parts within the narrative. And again, Nick, before you fucking get mad at me for this, I do genuinely love this film. Uh-huh. But there are just so many parts in the story that you just have to ignore, or they have to just create reasons to keep the movie going, to keep the plot going. And I'm just like, we can just streamline some of this and we lose nothing.
Sure. There are definitely things that could have been edited out.
Like, I was talking to Peter about it, and Peter's like, we don't need Cole Meany. I'm like, no, you need Cole Meany. Rewatching this, you don't need Cole Meany.
No. I mean, he has some funny lines, I guess. How many of these films do you own, Chris?
I'm pretty sure I own, if it's available on Blu-ray, I have it.
Nice.
For Cage. I want to talk about the collateral damage a little bit, because we talked about it a little bit. This movie definitely has some of the most collateral damage of any movie, and there's actually a great part where they're wanting to shoot down the plane over an empty desert. And they're like, look, these people will die, but we'll save so many lives. And Cusack's like, nope, don't do it. Don't do it. And obviously it crashes into the Vegas, old Vegas, I think, is where it crashes through.
The layout of Vegas makes sense. The Fremont area.
Yeah.
Because you get the LED screen with the jets and everything. True.
What's the area that has the most smashers for people's heads?
But what I like about it is at the end, after everything happens, Cusack comments, he makes a comment about like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we should have, it would have maybe made more sense to just shoot it down. Like, I can't remember the exact line, but he comments on the fact that they created a lot more damage by letting it go.
Yeah, my wife was really, the whole like plane crashing scene, she was just like, the casualties.
Well, they were trying to drive the airplane towards the airport because there was a landing strip that was going to be completely clear for them. But Gainey was like, nope, we're landing on the strip. And the word is crash.
Swamp Thing.
Yeah, I fucking love him.
To be fair, I think they were going down, right? They lost an engine, I think.
Yeah.
Come on, Swamp Thing is not going to just crash into people. He's a good guy. He would have went to the airport if he could make it.
Swamp Thing did nothing.
If he had the option, he would have gone to the airport.
Right. He did the best he could. I think Con Air also has maybe the highest ratio of like dudes walking away from explosions than any movie.
Oh, it's got some really good ones.
There are a lot of explosions and dudes who walk away from them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, almost. I think everyone... Virtually everyone in the main cast gets to walk away from at least one explosion. And Cusack and Cage both get to dive.
Yeah, I was really disappointed with Nicolas Cage running away from the explosion there at the Lerner Air Base or whatever. Because, I mean, you could tell there was like a green screen or whatever. Like, he was just, I don't know, emotionally dead. He could have been jogging to the restroom. No, because you have some sense of urgency in that. He just had like such a placid face, like, I'm just going for a stroll.
It's the most obvious use of green screen in the movie, too. It's like that's the one where it really does stand out.
I would also say the when Cusack's in the prison and the bomb goes off.
Oh, sure.
Because the door like that's flips true. Over him and like slams into the wall. And then when the plane goes down... And the propeller comes loose and it comes right between.
Oh, right between. Yeah. That was sick, though. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
I also like that Cusack wears Birkenstocks. Which was his choice.
I love his giant suit as well.
Those are just straight up prison slippers. Like, they're made of plastic. And they're definitely not comfortable.
Yeah, but apparently Cusack was like, I'll do this movie, but I get to wear Birkenstocks.
So gross.
He compared it to Charlton Heston and like the old like sword and sandal movies and stuff. It's like, oh, I think it's a fun little touch.
I mean, that is, it's definitely interesting.
I enjoy Cusack. He's a weird
he is
guy.
A weird guy.
Yeah, this is just one of two Cusack Cage overlaps, though. Yeah,
and just this in Frozen Ground, right?
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
also a minor
Arsenal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's not on ours.
Yeah, we didn't end up putting that in the bracket, but yeah.
There's also a minor.
Arsenal's not great, so that makes sense.
Well, good. I'm glad we didn't put it in.
Don't worry, I own it. We can watch it anytime.
Fantastic.
I did a giveaway of Arsenal. I gave away like 3 copies of those.
I have a VHS copy of City of Angels just begging to be given away. I can't give it away. It was a Christmas gift.
The fact that you have a VHS of it, you do have to just like frame it, put it in a shadow
probably.
Box.
Yeah. Whenever I buckle down and purchase my replica of the Beast, I'll get a shadow box for City of Angels as well.
Perfect.
Put it right next to it. Place of honor. It's like, wow, Nick, you have very diverse taste for Nicolas Cage films.
So within the matrix of good, bad, bad, good, where do we want to put this one?
I'm going to stick with terrific film, terrific Cage.
I say terrific film, scattershot Cage.
I'll wait for my defense.
I would go excellent film, excellent Cage.
I think I'm with Nick and Chris on this one. I think it's a pretty excellent performance. I think the accent work is really shitty. But it doesn't matter. Who gives a shit?
We've never gone to Nicolas Cage for accent work.
Never.
Like, unless he's a Boston cop.
Oh, he nails that one.
Yeah. Never he's been working on it.
His accent in this is interesting, too, because it, like, sometimes he goes into his Raising Arizona accent, which also doesn't make any sense. Is some, like, I don't know anyone from Arizona that talks like that, whatever that accent is that he's doing, but it doesn't matter. It's still excellent.
Yeah, he's never been able to put an accent to a location well, but you know, he gets out there and he does it. He just tries, man. Yeah,
I respect it.
Yeah. But I think being just a straight action film like this, he was also like, what, this came out before Face Off, you said?
Yeah, it's a week before.
So it's like he got to do something a little different with an action film like this. And, you know, it's not as woozy, wowsy, wild, but it's a great action film performance. I would have put him up against Stallone any day.
He's jacked as fuck.
Well, oh, yeah.
And what? Because right before this, he did
Red Walk West.
Bringing out the dead. We just talked. Kiss of Death was around this time as well. That's why he's so huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he does that thing where he's like sitting cross-legged on the ground and just like lifts himself up with his arms. And he's just holding himself up.
Oh, just on his fingertips. Ugh.
Yeah.
That made my arthritis hurt.
But this is definitely an ensemble movie, right? I think people kind of remember it more as a Cage vehicle, but it's really about the whole cast.
Yeah, the sum of its parts.
Yeah, it's nothing without Garland Green.
Yeah,
exactly. And speaking of the vehicle, the plane kind of looks like the plane from Tailspin a little bit.
Oh, it does.
Like it's very similar in design. I don't know if, did Jerry Bruckheimer produce Tailspin?
I would not be shocked to find that out, but I don't think so. I really want that to be true, though.
Yeah,
Jerry Bruckheimer produced Tailspin movie?
Not until we get National Treasure 3.
Yeah.
Could be the same thing.
Ooh.
We're going to get Turtletop on board. So at this point, I'm kind of curious, Chris, what is your favorite Cage movie? I know you did the bracket yourself and Raising Arizona came out on top, but like.
That was 6 years ago, and it's been a very productive 6 years.
It has been. I really stopped doing that column at like the wrong time. Because he really like got like a second wind right around the time that I stopped. Raising Arizona is my favorite Cage movie. I've got a have a top four that's pretty solid, and the fifth is like kind of varies. But Raising Arizona, Wild at Heart, Valley Girl, Face Off, those are my top four. Easy. Number five kind of fluctuates. Adaptation, Bringing Out the Dead, like the two that are most common that I would say. Oh no, crap! Did I leave out Red Rock West?
Red Rock West is amazing.
Such yes, a good Red film. Rock West is number five. So Bringing Out the Dead and Adaptation battle it out for number six.
Fair. I'm glad you mentioned Valley Girl. I think that one is a little underrated.
Valley Girl was such a great film. Yeah, it just so went good. Up against Vampire's Kiss for us, and yeah. that was
unfortunate.
It's just bracketology, yeah. right? Like, yeah. it hit a fucking top seat, or well, not even a top seat, because that one's not rated crazy well. But it's that movie is fantastic. Yeah. But yeah, Valley Girl is a lot of fun. And I still, I listen to the Sparks album that they feature on that one yeah. all the time.
Valley Girl is a great example movie. Too, because I think, you know, when Cage started doing, you know, it's kind of like, I think Wicker Man is kind of when like Cage's star kind of started to drop a little bit. And he started doing more direct-to-video stuff and started getting more negative reviews. I think that's around the same time that people started kind of like latching on to this idea that Cage always goes over the top and he'll do anything and this is a new thing. But if you watch Valley Girl, like, he's been the same actor. Like, he's always had that in him. He has a Cage freak out in Valley Girl. It's no different than anything you would see in Ghost Rider.
Yeah, well, he even got to like break out a little bit in, say, like Peggy Sue Got Married.
Yeah.
And
that's a great example too.
A lot of his older works, he's got Birdie. Great examples. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So, of these two films, and keep in mind, your opinion does not matter in this context. But which film would you like to see go ahead?
This is actually really tough. I feel like on one hand, I want to say Con Air because it's the more like pop cultural significance to it. But I'm going to go Ghost Rider because I just love it more. I'd rather watch Ghost Rider more. It's more fun for me. It's more Cage. And I think Con Air is less Cage than deserving for this bracket. So I would Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance would get my vote.
Like, I was thinking about this, and Con Air is definitely the much more memeable film. It's the one, like, you say Nicolas Cage, people are going to think the hair and the just that, but it really is more of an ensemble cast, and he doesn't have the most screen time in it. And when you take Ghost Rider, which is a tight film, very little fat to cut off, you know, campy dialogue, but is just a blast from start to finish, I'd have to go Ghost Rider as well.
I've struggled with this one a lot. I think based on most of my metrics that I've used in the past, which are wildly conflicting, I think I want to go Con Air, because if I'm thinking about this as a movie I'm going to recommend to somebody, it's got the widest appeal. I mean, it's bookended by How Do I Live Without You? Do, 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 do. It's got the bunny.
Like I said, it's got the memeable moments, but I don't think.
I don't know. I don't consider those memeable moments. I consider them memorable moments.
Fine.
It is the.
Like, one of these movies has been forgotten by time, and I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't know if it was forgotten by time. It just came out at a poor time. Yeah. So I guess I'm going to go Con Air. It's a timeless classic. It fits any time unless you're short on time. but it's, I don't know, it's a solid film. And, you know, I mean, they're both solid films. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you either.
I would definitely...
Now just kiss.
Do that's it. Not for audio. It's too loud.
Yeah. Turn the gain down. Yeah. Turn that MC gainy down.
So this is another rare Peter decision.
Too much power coming this direction. No, I did actually think about this. I love Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. I think it's a fucking fantastic movie. It's one of my favorite comic book movies. But watching Con Air with Rachel, I was like, oh, yeah, this is part of the mix. Like, there's a reason it exists. as a movie that everyone talks about for Nick Cage. It's when he was at the peak of his power the first time, and then it just goes to shit. And I love that he's got the resurgence, but there's something about like 90s schlock that still holds some power over me that Ghost Rider doesn't hit, even though I fucking love that movie. So I think for this situation, I have to push Con Air. Also, it now has to go up against Face Off, which I think is going to be fun to talk about because those are two super powerhouses and one must leave. So that's
no, my vote. I mean, I don't disagree with any of what either of you have said. I like both these movies quite a bit.
Yeah. Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. Everyone should watch it. It's a fucking romp. I wish we could have gotten the full budget R-rated, like no fucks given.
Yeah, that totally could have changed things.
Yeah, 100%.
We were robbed. I want your bit about Con Air being 90s schlock is a really good point, because I don't like, this is such a Jerry Bruckheimer produced movie, and I feel like action movies, we don't get action movies in this same way with this type of ensemble cast. It's kind of like the DNA for the Fast and the Furious movies, but even they're not Con Air.
No, they're great, but they're not Con Air.
People involved in those movies,
Tokyo Drift.
People in those movies take themselves, their careers in those movies way too seriously.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Con Air, everyone knew what Con Air was. It feels all intentional to me. None of it, the way you kept saying memeable. I would say memorable works better, because memeable to me is you're kind of poking fun of it. You're taking scenes out of context and laughing at it. But I don't think you can do that with Con Air, because Con Air knows what it is and everything's intentional. I think there's nothing in that movie where somebody does something and we laugh because they didn't know it was funny. I guess, except for maybe Cage's accent.
Yeah, I do find it funny though, the whole everything's intentional, considering that script was being rewritten every fucking day.
Oh yeah, what a nightmare that would be too.
This movie, the script is being rewritten, but I feel like all those actors knew what they were doing. And
yes,
yeah,
100%.
All right, well, that settles that one.
How do I live without you?
Well, thanks for coming on, Chris. Do you have anything you want to pitch to our audience of mostly our friends?
Yeah, I mean, Letterboxd is always good. Just Chris_Koffel. And then, Film School Rejects. Again, I mostly just write in October now, usually. But I do a lot in October every year. And then, on the Rocket League field, you can find me on Rocket League every night, pretty much.
Does your car have a sweet name? I don't know anything. Well, I know the basics of Rocket League, but do you get to name your car?
Not name your car, but you can have teams. And I do have a team, and we are Werewolves on Wheels.
So, Werewolves on Wheels, I like
with
it.
That, with a fellow Film School Rejects writer.
Yeah, Werecats.
You missed Werecats, man. Come on.
Yeah, well, Werewolves on Wheels is a good 70s exploitation movie. So.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha. All right, that tracks.
Nick, what's the name of your spaceship and Helldivers?
Oh, it's the SES Fist of Family Values.
Fantastic.
And mine is the SES Superintendent of Self-Determination.
Yeah. Nice.
You can find Nick and I on Helldivers too.
All right, next up we've got Guarding Tess and Moonstruck going head to head. That'll be a fun one.
My buddy Ian's supposed to join us. That'll be fun.
We'll have a good time with that. So thank you all for listening. We're on social media, Cage Match Pod, Cage_Match_Pod. We're also on IMDb now, which is hilarious to me.
Thank you for that, Peter.
Yeah, I just think it's so funny that that's something that we can do. So you can find us on there. Leave us a comment. Maybe. I don't know. Review us.
Upload a photo of me.
Yeah, you can do that. It's community.
I have photos of Nick.
Yeah. Well, you have this power. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nick has photos of me as well.
This is a power people shouldn't have. You can support us on Patreon at Cage Match. Thank you to our supporters, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, and Adam, and our cage dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, and Nathan. You fuel this hell machine that we have created. Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
Toot, toot.
Hopefully it's on the record.
Yeah, good. And my confusion afterwards.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not on the record, your confusion afterwards.
Ooh, even better. Yeah, leave just, people guessing.
Just add a trombone sound.
Okay.
We see the letters are written in crayon.
Start with the letters, and we go A.
I will tell you, as a parent, you do lie and make up cards that look like a child wrote them.
I do that.
Your child doesn't want to do it.
I mean, I do that with my pets, so I get it.
Yeah.
How many times has that actually successfully fooled someone?
Don't ask follow-up questions.
We know some dumb people.
We do.
We do know some dumb people.
Wait, Cora didn't write me that letter?